Kia ora, welcome to Emirates Podcast, episode 328. Today is Friday, February 3rd, 2017. Well, that makes three episodes so far this year. That's better than one a month. You know, celebrate small victories, I always say. I have several updates today, including and starting with a major one for New Zealand. The date of the next parliamentary elections has been announced. Earlier this week, Prime Minister Bill English announced that the next New Zealand parliamentary elections will be held on Saturday, September 23rd, 2017. Now, by law, they have to be held sometime between September and November. And I was expecting it would be sometime in October, maybe, not waiting all the way till November. He's going a bit early. Now, I don't have any special insight as to why he's going early. However, he's a new prime minister, having replaced John Key, who was prime minister for nearly 9 years. And so he probably wants to get a fresh mandate, which is fair enough, because he is quite different from John Key. John Key was a pragmatic conservative, meaning basically that he would change directions if it was unpopular. Bill English is much more doctrinaire, or ideological is probably a better word, and is much more conservative than John Key was. So in order to do the things that he wants to do, he really does need to have a fresh mandate. So, you know, that's all fair enough, basically. What will happen is that when we go to the polls, New Zealand voters will, because our system is called MMP, which is a proportional representation system, they will vote for the party that they want to form government. And the seats in parliament are allocated according to the percentage of the party vote. So, for example, if the Labour Party got 50% of the party vote, which isn't going to happen, by the way, but if they did, they'd be entitled to 50% of the seats in Parliament. Now, they also run candidates in the various electorates around the country, and that starts as the base. And what happens next is that MPs are brought in on what's called the party list, which is drawn up by each party, to top up their numbers to make sure that the percentage of seats in Parliament matches the percentage of the party vote that they received. It's not nearly as complicated as it sounds. It's actually quite straightforward. It does take a couple times going through to get the hang of it, but it is a fairly simple and straightforward system. And it works really quite well for us. It's fair and it's democratic and all those sorts of things. And what it does require, generally speaking, and part of the reason for MMP is that it almost always requires a coalition government. It's not easy for one party to get enough seats to govern alone. It can happen. And we've come close a few times with National, but it generally doesn't happen. Generally speaking, they do have to be in coalition with other parties, or at least have agreements for other parties to support them in Parliament. And that, in my view, that's a good thing because it moderates the ruling party. They can't do whatever they want. They've got to take other parties into account and, I don't know, be a bit more careful maybe, or a bit less extreme in some cases. National Party has been held up by, or supported, I should say, by two one-person parties, David Seymour, who is of the ACT Party. I'm using scare quotes. You can't see that. And also Peter Dunn of the United Future Party, in quote marks. They're both one-person parties in Parliament. And they both hold their seats primarily because of deals. National didn't run a serious candidate in David Seymour's electorate, Epsom, or in Peter Dunn's Oahu. But in the case of both of those, the center-left didn't get their act together to have effective opposition. For example, in Epsom, if the two parties had either not run a candidate, or if they had a candidate whose job was only to get the party vote and just said, look, I'm not going to win this electorate, I think you should vote for the National Party candidate, then it's very possible that ACT would have been gone from Parliament. But they didn't do that. And I think that was a tactical error. And in Oahu, they very often have had a candidate of the Greens and the candidate of Labour. They split the center-left vote, and Peter Dunn gets back in. So there is a need for a more coordinated effort on the center-left, and there is one. The Green Party and the Labour Party have formed what they call a Memorandum of Understanding. And what it is essentially, to boil it down to simplest terms, is that they will work together where there is commonality, and they will respect each other's differences where there is not. And the goal is to present an image of a stable government in waiting. And the reason that's important is because in 2011 and 2014, Labour held the Greens at arm's length and they wouldn't commit. And in 2014, in particular, the Greens were very coy about who they'd go into coalition with. They were saying, oh, they could work with National, which is, yeah, right. But that's what they were saying. And that left supporters of a potential Labour government or Labour-Greens government thinking, oh, well, we can't count on them to be able to work together. And so some of them supported National because of that. They wanted stable government. And this time they are going out of their way in some respects to present a united front. The leaders of the two parties have addressed the conferences of each other's parties already. And just this week, the Labour and Green parties held a joint State of the Nation event where the leaders of the parties gave their State of the Union speeches. State of the Nation speeches. I keep saying State of the Union. And it was basically talking about vision and all that sort of thing. This week, the leader of the New Zealand National Party, Prime Minister Bill English, gave his State of the Nation speech. And he was talking about, it's not a whole lot of policy, certainly not any vision to speak of, but one of his promises was that if they're reelected, the government will hire 880 new cops, which, you know, sounds good because a lot of people are worried about an increase in crime. Whether or not they should be or not is a whole other issue, and it's beyond this particular topic. But nevertheless, there is a perception that the crime is rising or not being dealt with well enough, or those sorts of things. And there is an element of truth to that, I should say. So he says that they promised that they'll hire 880 new cops. However, yesterday, Andrea Vance, who's one of the reporters on One News, which is TVNZ's evening news bulletin, the dominant bulletin in the ratings, tweeted out that, and this is a direct quote, "Police numbers steadily fallen since 2010 when headcount was 9213. As of March last year, it was 7883. Now, what that means is that even with the 880 cops that National has promised, the actual numbers of cops will still be lower than in 2010 when National was also still in government, was leading government. So that means that National actually isn't doing anything much to combat rising crime. They're just pretending that they are. And that's bad in itself. But even worse, last year, Labour proposed hiring 1,000 new cops. So National has no plan for dealing with crime. They're copying Labour's idea and not doing it as well. And it's kind of typical of the way things have gotten with this government. They tend to deny that problems that everybody can see actually exist. For example, that there's a housing crisis, that there's child poverty, that there's a rising income gap, a rising inequality. They deny that any of that is true, even though the statistics are unassailable. The evidence is clear, and yet they deny that the problem even exists, because if they deny that the problem exists, they don't have to do anything about it. So I think it's fairly clear that they are out of ideas. Now, other people will disagree with that, obviously, and supporters of the National Party will probably have all sorts of reasons why Labour and the Greens shouldn't be in government, but since they haven't released a whole lot of policy yet, that's going to be kind of difficult for them to do. It basically just comes down to, we don't like them. And believe me, that's what it comes down to more often than not. However, there is another problem here, and that is that as happens very often throughout the world, the center-left voters tend to fight each other more than the conservative opponents they're trying to defeat at the polls. And so they end up trashing each other's parties and motives and all those sorts of things, rather than keeping their eye on the common foe and concentrating on their points of similarity and their points of agreement. They instead focus only on the points of disagreement and the points of dissimilarity. Now, that happens throughout the world. We saw it in the U.S. during the Democratic primary campaign, where you had hardcore Bernie supporters and hardcore Hillary supporters who were fighting each other constantly in social media, even after Hillary became the nominee, some of the Bernie people were still sniping at Hillary supporters, and that was counterproductive. It didn't, by itself, it didn't elect Don as president of the U.S., but it certainly helped elect him. And so we have the same problem here. We have the problem of the infighting in the left. There's a saying in American politics, and I think it's true here as well, that they talk about Democratic voters, but you could substitute that with the left. And that is that in the U.S. they say that Democratic voters fall in love, Republican voters fall in line. And it's really true. Republican voters will vote for the Republican candidate pretty much no matter what. There's very seldom will they vote against their own party's candidate. I'm talking about actual Republicans, not independents who lean Republican. And the same thing is true here, too. Those who are National Party supporters or New Zealand First supporters will support their party pretty much no matter what. But Labour and Green voters are really fickle, and they will come and go depending on which way the wind is blowing. Slight exaggeration. But it's nevertheless true that you can't count on them as much. In New Zealand politics, people often talk about missing million voters. And those are Labour-identified. The theory goes that there are a million Labour-identified voters who simply don't vote, who stopped voting after they didn't vote in 2011 or 2014. Now, there's some evidence that those voters actually exist, but there's also evidence that it's a myth. And I personally am a little unclear and uncertain as to whether or not there really are a million missing voters. But just taking for the sake of argument that there really are a million missing voters, if you don't have a united front, you're not going to win them over and give them a reason to come forward and vote, especially because in 2014, there was a major campaign making John Key the issue, and it didn't work. Now, part of that was because David Cunliffe, who was the leader of the Labour Party at the time, was desperately unpopular throughout the country. He was very popular with the base of the Labour Party, but not much beyond that. And that's ultimately one of the major reasons why Labour lost the election. But another was the fact that they held the Green Party at arm's length. Things are very different now. The Green Party and the Labour Party openly talk with each other. They openly promote each other, even while presenting their points of difference. And so that could go a long way to dealing with all of these problems I've just been talking about for the center-left. Now, will that mean there will be a change of government? I don't know. And nobody knows. And it would be foolish to make a prediction this far out. Bill English did lead the National Party to its worst ever election defeat back in 2002, when he was leader of the party back then. That doesn't mean that's going to happen this time. He could still win, and National could still form the next government. The odds are long, not just because of him, but also because of the fact that it is unusual for a party to win a fourth term, and which is what that would mean. And it is more likely that people will get sick at National and want to give the other guys a go. Because what typically happens is that voters vote in a government and things go along. They'll re-elect them probably twice, and then they'll have enough of them and give the other guys a go. That happens all the time. So after 9 years of being in government, it is National's, it is, well, I don't want to overstate it, but it is one of the strikes against the probability of the re-election of the National government, the fact that they've been in government for 9 years. People will want change, as typically happens. That oven by itself, nor the history of Bill English, is enough to guarantee that there will be a change of government, and there's a lot that can happen between now and then. One of the complicating factors in this is this guy, Winston Peters, of the leader of the New Zealand First Party. He will use immigration as one of his major things. He always does. He, in the past, has railed against Asian immigration. I don't think that railing against immigrants from Muslim countries or refugees is going to get him anywhere here, because we're just not afraid of them. And so that's probably not going to work. If he rails against Asian immigrants, on the other hand, that is something that could work. You know, the old yellow peril sort of thing, as we've seen in the past. And it could very well work for him in gaining votes. It also could work if at any point the Labour Green, not coalition exactly, but effort, joint effort, if it seems to be coming unstuck, or if they seem to be not a stable alternative government, some people will turn to New Zealand First instead, the swing voters. And some conservatives who are sick of the national government for whatever reason may end up going with Winston Peters as well. We will see. There's a new party on the horizon called the Opportunity Party, or TOP, and it's run by economist Gareth Morgan, and who's a bit of a gadfly. He's the guy who proposed basically exterminating cats in New Zealand, which didn't go over too well. But he's very rich, and he is more of a pragmatist than either left or right. He's a little bit of left, a little bit of right. His immigration policies are somewhat nativist, and I should ultimately, I want to blog about this once the Labour and Green parties have announced their immigration policies. Actually, I might wait until they all have. Among other things, they want a consideration only of what an immigrant can bring to New Zealand. Now, on the face of it, that sounds like a sensible thing. You don't want to bring in immigrants who don't bring something to New Zealand. However, the bigger issue here, though, is that the happiness and success of New Zealanders isn't just measured by economic results or balance sheets or what have you. There are also emotional and other factors involved. And I don't think we want to go down the road where we only let in immigrants because of something they can to deliver to the economy. We also want to have room to allow immigrants in who bring happiness to New Zealanders. As, for example, I was able to get here to become a permanent resident as the partner of a New Zealander. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. I'm not sure that it necessarily is New Zealand's best interest to bring in parents and more distant relatives through that same process, but that's a discussion we should be able to have, a grown-up discussion. But I am cautious about anybody who talks about economic value as being the main thing that we should consider with immigration, because I don't think that's the sole factor. It is an important one, but not necessarily even the most important one for some immigrants anyway. But I'll probably come back to that in a future time once we know more. But speaking of immigrants who add value or not, I talked before about Peter Thiel, the billionaire founder of PayPal, who was granted New Zealand citizenship in 2011. I think it was last week, must have been last week, or the week before, I can't remember now. The government did a dump of the documents related to all of that. They did it in the evening so that it wouldn't make the evening news, and they thought that people would forget about it by the next day or something, I don't know. But it doesn't look good for them, because he made promises of things that he could do to promote New Zealand, all of which he could do as a permanent resident, which he already was. He didn't have to be a citizen in order to do that. He has a multi-million dollar property in Wanaka down near Queenstown, but he has not lived in New Zealand long enough to get citizenship. You have to live something like 1,300 days or something. He hadn't, and he made clear that he would not be living in New Zealand. So he got special permission, a special dispensation to do it. And, as if all that weren't enough, he got a special citizenship ceremony at the New Zealand consulate in California somewhere. I don't know which one. I can't remember. Whereas normally a new citizen gets their ceremony in whatever local area they live. Like mine, for example, was in the old North Shore City, because that's where we were living. And so the mayor and the deputy mayor are the ones who do the official, swearing in. Yeah, it is a swearing in, I guess, and conferring of citizenship and all that. And but he didn't have that. He had a private ceremony, a special private ceremony at the New Zealand consulate in California. And so everything about it amounts to special treatment for him. And I just really don't like that. I don't think that it's right to sell citizenship just because somebody's rich. He hasn't done anything for New Zealand. He apparently gave $1 million to Canterbury earthquake relief, which is great, you know, fantastic. But he didn't have to be a citizen to do that. And some of the other things that he's done, well, I'm not really aware of any value he's added to New Zealand. So if you're going to be talking about New Zealanders who add value, whether economically or socially, he doesn't seem to have done that. And his values overall don't mesh well with New Zealand. He has some very peculiar ideas. He was a guy who suggested forming these giant city-states on ships that would be anchored outside of the territorial limits of the U.S. So they would be sovereign nations free of U.S. laws and taxes, but they would still be within flying distance of the cities on the coasts so that they could still run their business empires in the U.S. So he had some loopy ideas, and I don't think that his values necessarily are New Zealand values. And I really don't mean to harp on him in particular, even though I really do not like him or his politics. It's because the issue here is very simple. Do we want to just sell citizenship to the highest bidder or give rich people special treatment that nobody else can get? And I don't think that we should do that. I don't think any country should do that. But I don't know. But I think that story has now probably run its course. I don't think we'll hear much more about it unless there's some new scandal, but I don't think there will be. But hey, I've been surprised many times before, like last November. But anyway, so those are two of the big updates that I saw this week in the New Zealand news. There are probably others, and I'm sure I'll touch on them in the weeks ahead. I also thought I would update what I was talking about last time about the preparations in the House. The gout attack is still going on. I still have it now. And over the weekend, I felt really crappy because, as I've said many times, one of the downsides of having a gout attack is that there are often, for me anyway, there are usually flu-like symptoms that accompany a gout attack. And so on Saturday and Sunday of the holiday weekend, I just didn't feel like doing the painting I wanted to do. I didn't feel up to it. So I didn't. But Sunday, I was still feeling bad, and I thought, I've got to get this done because it was a very sunny, warm weekend, hot weekend even, and I'd missed two sunny days that I could have done this. So I did do the painting on Monday, which is a public holiday, anniversary day, even though I didn't feel up to it. And actually, once I got started, it wasn't too bad. There's something therapeutic about just grabbing a brush and just painting something without having to think too much about it. I find it strangely relaxing, actually. So I did that, and that was great. Great to get it done and to persevere over my adversity. But then on Monday night, I think it was, or Tuesday, I can't remember, it got worse. Because what's been happening ever since this whole drama started back in August is that it never stays in the same joint for more than 3 or 4 days. Then it moves to another joint. And this time it moved to a joint in the back of my ankle. And it was so bad that I needed my crutches in order to walk. And that meant I couldn't do much of anything on Tuesday or Wednesday. Yesterday, it was a bit better. I could walk around without the crutches. And today, so far, I can walk around without the crutches as well. It's not particularly painful, but it is sometimes when I walk, if that makes sense. When I'm just sitting around, it doesn't necessarily hurt a lot. I'm aware of it, but it's not like profound pain. But it's interfering with what I want to do. And as if that weren't enough, the guy who I've gotten who's washing the house, and there's one part of the deck that still has to be washed, was supposed to come on Tuesday. He forgot there was a holiday weekend. He said it was going to be Wednesday, I think. No, maybe it was going to be Thursday. At any rate, it was going to come Wednesday, and then it was going to come Thursday because he forgot about the holiday weekend. And then I got a text that his truck blew up. And so he's going to come today. I don't know if he's going to. He said around midday. Well, I don't know. As I'm recording, it's 11:07 a.m. I don't know if he's going to show up or not. But unless that part of the deck is washed, I can't start the staining of the deck. And I really want to get that done this weekend, weather permitting. I don't know how at this point. I may have to ask family to help me. But that is the goal. And so if he doesn't show up today, I neglected to mention that today it's also been raining a lot, and going up on the roof is dangerous when it's raining. If he doesn't show up today, we'll have to get our own water blaster and finish this last part of the deck so that we can start the staining probably on Sunday, if weather permitting. But so even if he had shown up yesterday as planned, I wouldn't be able to do the cutting in or staining of the deck today as I wanted to do because of the weather. So, you know, it's one step forward, another step back in this whole process, and it doesn't help that I still have this gout going on. And there's not much I can do about it at the moment. I can't up the dosage of allopurinol, as I understand it, until this attack passes, whenever that might be. And I just have to wait it out and hope for the best. So, yeah, so isn't that lovely? Meanwhile, I mentioned that our Two Political podcast has resumed posting episodes. We just posted the second one of the year. And we are also starting a new series called Two Political Light, which is where one of us will talk about something or other. And the first one of those is just about to be posted. And in it, Jason will be talking about the Women's March. He participated in the one in Washington, D.C. And so he talks about what he saw and what he experienced and those sorts of things. So if you don't listen to Too Political, you're really missing out because you get all my political opinions about the U.S. of A. But this is something a little different we're trying. And, of course, obviously we'd like feedback on whether or not it's something worth pursuing. And you can get to those at toopolitical.com. But that's it for today. That's it for this week. I will talk to you soon. Have a great weekend. Bye. You can comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can send me an audio message through Audioboo or Skype, where my username is Amrens, and you can email me, with or without a voice message, at Arthur, that's ARTHUR, at amrenspodcast.com. This podcast is recorded and distributed under a Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.